the ignorance that Buddhism was kind of pointing to. So when he uses the term ignorance, it's really talking about an ignorance of self. And the ignorance of self is, it's kind of like I believe that I'm inherently existing. And I believe that the reality of who I am lives from my side and is actually inherently existing from my side alone. And this makes me independent from you. And this makes you also inherently existing from your side. And so from that perspective, there's like very little reason for me to need to connect to you. There's a lot of reason for me to start to frame you as a source of gratification or a source of being an obstacle for me and something I need to overcome. Or if you're not a source of gratification or a source of pain for me, then you're totally unimportant to me, one way or the other. Like, I have no connection to you. Okay? So, and the Buddha said, like, despite the way that that's the way it feels to us, it's not really how it is. That's not how it exists. When you slow down and look at it closely, that's not how it exists. So, like, the usual way this appears to us is, one of my teachers frames it as, like, the feeling of I'm it. Right? Like, wherever you are in the room right now, like, that's the center of the room, right? I mean, that's the most important place in the room. I mean, you're kind of like transitionally, kind of like loosely aware that there are actual other human sentient beings in the room with you. But, you know, clearly, like, the way you feel and the way you're seeing things and, like, your story and your life and all of this stuff is just foundationally more important to you than mine. Right, so everyone's just kind of like existing in a periphery, in a sense. Okay, and they become either something that can gratify you or get in your way, or something that's neither one of those, and so maybe they don't matter all that much. Right? So it's like wherever I am, that's the center of the room, like that's the place to be, you know. Even if you're like all the way in the back over there or something. Wherever you are, like that's the center of things. Okay, so that's the way it usually appears. And so, in actuality, Buddha said this is not the case, and that things are much more relative than that. They're relative and interdependent, not inherently existing. Not inherently existing. So, and relativity is like an interesting concept that we've really developed in Western civilization, you know, over the last century or so. Somewhere in there, right? This idea of relativity. Even in the physical world, there is relativity. And so take like a classical physical example. It can kind of like help to connect to some logic in the physical world about this. So you may be able to see it in yourself. Okay? So like the classical example, well, it was Galileo, so he never talked about trains, but it's been updated into trains. So you have a train, okay? Train is going on a track. It's going at 70 miles an hour. It passes a guy on a platform. Okay? A stationary platform. And just at the same moment in space and time that the train is passing the platform, there's a guy inside the train seated in front of a window, and he's being served a cup of tea. Okay, so at the same moment in space and time, the guy on the platform apprehends the cup of tea, and the guy seated apprehends the cup of tea. From the perspective of the man on the platform, the tea is traveling 70 miles an hour. From the perspective of the guy seated in the train, the tea appears to be traveling stationary. It's traveling at 0 miles per hour. So, who's correct?
Both are.
Both are.
It's relative.
Maybe neither are. Maybe it's relative. Maybe you'd like to ask who's right and who's wrong is to ask the wrong question. Like, framing the question that way, like, pulls you out of any possibility of a meaningful answer. Okay? Who has some kind of absolute truth about the situation? So, like, another usual way is, like, if I pull the... Well, they have a pool table. I've never been in a place where they had a pool table and I was going to do the pool table thing. So like, let's say like I pulled that pool table over and I like, threw all the balls out on it, okay, and let them all come to rest wherever that would be. And then I gave everyone in here a sketch pad and a piece of chalk, and I asked you to sketch the table and the balls. I mean, I would get a host of different sketches. Everyone's perspective on it would be different. And then you could ask, who has the essence of the table? Who's captured it? It's reality. Who has the absolute perspective here? And again, perhaps it would be everyone. Perhaps it would be no one. Perhaps, like, the reality of this transcends our usual ways of conceiving of it. Because we like to box things up and have things very concretized and figured out. Maybe it actually doesn't work like that. And the Buddha's point was, like, maybe you're doing that with yourself, right? Maybe you think of yourself as existing inherently from its own side. Almost like there's some inherent Parkerness somewhere in here, right? Some essential me, right? Like some little homunculus or something pulling the strings. Right? It's the usual Western idea of the soul. It's eternalistic. And it's unchanging. It is essential. That makes me feel very independent from you. That makes me feel like I am actually existing from my own side. But maybe that's not how it is. Maybe it's different than that. So another example that the Buddha used was, take this table. So like when we all walked in here, we apprehended the table. And that's the label we have for it, given the language that we speak and the culture that we're coming from. We call it a table. And we paid no more attention to it than that. And we look at it almost like there's some inherent tableness somewhere in here. Right? Like you could... Like it exists that way from its own side. Permanently. Inherently. But in actuality, what was the reality of this thing here before it was a table? It was finished lumber, maybe. On a manufacturer's floor. Before that, it was raw lumber. That would be the label we would have for it. Before that, it was a tree. Before that, it was a seat on another tree. After it's done being a table, maybe we'll call it trash. And maybe someone who doesn't have a home is going to come by tonight and see it in a dumpster. And for him or her, it'll be firewood. And it'll be a way for them to keep themselves warm. Then after it's done being firewood, it'll become ash. And after it's done being ash, maybe it'll be compost somewhere in some farmer's field or whatever. So the Buddha was like, instead of just walking into the room and seeing this thing as a table and believing that it has that reality inherently within it from its own side, and then just categorizing it like that, is like very, very limiting. I mean, if I put a bedspread on this table and laid down on it and took a nap, could we reasonably call it a bed? If I used it to stand on top of it so I could like fix that pipe up there, could we reasonably call it a step stool? I mean, in actuality, this object is just it's just an object with a certain form and function, but it doesn't exist inherently that way. From its own side. In fact, it's in a state of transition, like everything else, constantly. Like it's actually in the process of becoming something else right now. I mean, if we could see into its physical reality, the atomic structure of this table is actually shifting and changing and actually in motion. It's actually degrading, right? It's in this process of becoming something else. And maybe we're like that too. Maybe it would be really useful to actually just be able to walk into the room and instead of seeing a table and believing that this thing exists inherently, like there's some essential tableness here from its own side, and then just categorizing it like that. Maybe it would be fantastic to actually be able to see a table and finished lumber and raw lumber and a tree and a seat on another tree and trash and firewood and ash and compost all simultaneously without needing to like grasp at one label in particular for some kind of emotional neurotic need we have and to like push away other labels because we're uncomfortable with them for some reason and to get all weird about it and kind of stuck and strange about the way we perceive it. Maybe that would be really freeing. Maybe it would be interesting to like learn if you could possibly do that. And imagine if you could do that with yourself and other people. Imagine if you could perceive the world that way. I mean, what would that be like? I don't have a real concrete answer for that, by the way. I don't really know what that would be like because I can't do it. But my guess is it would be pretty cool. My guess is it would be pretty freeing. Probably feel kind of liberating to be able to see the world like that. So the Buddha said you could see this in yourself if you wanted to, if you did a little meditative exercise. If you took pictures of yourself, say from the day you were born, and then next to that, maybe one of my teachers actually had me do this on my bathroom mirror. All right, so I had a picture of myself at zero, and it was like a picture of me in my little crib, right? And I had like this stupid hat on my mom put on me, right? And I had like my butt up, kind of baby shot, like that. So I had that. And then I had like the next one was when I was 7. And then the next one was when I was 14. And then the next one was when I was 21. And so on. Right? And I put those pictures up with the understanding that every 7 years our anatomy, our physical reality totally recycles. Okay. So I put that up. And then underneath each picture, I put a little flash card, a little note card. And on the note card was the person in the picture. What do they believe in? What are their political and religious beliefs? What do they spend a lot of time doing? What are their priorities in life? Who are their major relationships in life? And so like, I put cards like that for each one of the people in the pictures. Right? And I could see, like really radically, who I was at 7 and who I was at 14 or 21. Or 28. For all intents and purposes, on a physical and a psychological level, you might as well be talking about two completely different human beings. Two entirely different human beings. Totally. I mean, think about it for a second. And yet, there is something that there's a continuity that runs through all of them. There is like this continuity of consciousness, in a sense, that runs through all of these manifestations of this person called Parker. And then I would project it out too. I'd go, who will I be at, you know, 47 and one, like so on until, you know, I was into old age. Can I even imagine like the kind of person that I'll be 21 years from now? Really? And won't it be true that that person will be radically different than the person I am now? Right? Physically and psychologically. So on that level, there doesn't appear to be any real inherent reality one way or the other to my conception of myself. This thing that I refer to when I use the pronouns I and me. There doesn't appear to be any inherent reality to that. Like it doesn't exist from its own side alone. And it is not static. It's not stable. It's not stationary. It's not capable of being put into a box somewhere. And even from the perspective of cognitive neuroscience, we've been looking for the I for a long time. It started back with Descartes. Right? It started back with Aristotle. Really. We've been trying to seek out the nature of self for a long time. And we've never been able to find it. Now in the 20th and 21st century, cognitive neuroscience has been looking for some neural correlate or group of neural correlates that could possibly be the seat of the I, the sense of self we all walk around with. Today, they cannot find it either. And Buddha's contention was, you can't find it because it doesn't exist. It won't exist in the neurology, and it doesn't exist in your psychology. Like, you just believe it does. You've created that. And because you created it, you can uncreate it too.
There's an article on Newsweek this week about brains, analyzing brains, and different cultures seem to have different parts of their brains doing different things, which must mean that learning and teaching and other things has an effect on which do what and the size of the parent.
Oh, sure, yeah. That effect is called neuroplasticity. Yeah, and it's like what you pay attention to becomes real. And not just psychologically, but it's reflected in the neurology as well. Right? To the extent that psychology and neurology are linked. Yeah. So like what you... Actually, karma is really quite straightforward. Everything you think and feel, and every word and every action that you say has a consequence. It has an effect. Right down to the neurological level. You're actively authoring your neurology right now. You're doing that. It's not a static thing that's set and it's concretized. We used to think it was. But it's not. It's in motion. It's dynamic like everything else. Now it's constantly being created and recreated. Yeah? Fascinating. So karma is really not such a mystical thing, really. It's just more of a statement of fact, the more you slow down and look at it closely. It's a statement of reality, maybe, that everything is interdependent. And constantly in a state of creativity and motion, and becoming dynamic. Okay. So that's the basic idea of ignorance of self, all right? So I believe that I am independent of you, which is like hard not to believe, right? Because in a conventional sense, I am actually independent from you. Like if I cut myself, right, you're not going to feel it. If you cut yourself, I'm not going to feel it. So there's a conventional separation between us on a physical level. Like Buddha's proposition was, this does not exist psychologically or spiritually. We think it does. And we invest a lot of reality in that. And so it really seems like it does. We've constructed a whole world about how I'm separate. And I'm different from you. Psychologically. Spiritually. And that, he said, that basic misapprehension of the reality of the situation is the foundation of all suffering, he said. It's the foundation of all of it. On top of that comes attachment, right? So if I'm separate and distinct from you, and fundamentally from my own side, I have this habit, this long-term habit, of projecting outside of me my gratification, my well-being, my sense of flourishing, my sense of joy, also my sense of dissatisfaction and loneliness and anger and depression. I project all of this outside of me just habitually. And I believe I'm cut off from you. I believe I'm different from you. And I'm kind of static. Like I'm not going to change. Like who I am now, I will always be this way. And I've always been this way. This is my fundamental delusion. And so like I would start to get really desperate about getting certain things outside of me and keeping other certain things outside of me away from me. And this is the idea of attachment. The basic idea of attachment.